This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Anesh.
Hey, what's up?
It's great talking to you. And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pill Eater, and J.G. Michael. This is his second appearance on the show.
Hi, what's Anesh. Up? Hey, I'm a huge fan.
Hey, thank you so much, man. I'm in Berlin. You guys are spread out on the West and East Coast, right?
I'm in California, and those two guys are both in Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia.
Pittsburgh.
Right on.
Huge.
Yeah, it's already dark here. It's like 9:30 p.m.
I actually missed you guys when you were in Delaware for the one tour with Pig, and it was really early on. I was still in school. I was like, oh, I think the same thing happened during Spank when you guys were in that same place in Delaware, and I really wanted to see you guys live. I think the last time you guys went to Philadelphia was during, like, Slick Idiot.
Right. I remember that. Yeah, I used to like to play Philadelphia, especially downtown. Also, old KMFDM, Big Fish stuff, always played downtown. But this time Delaware looks like a hole in the wall when you arrive. But then, you know, people are pretty down with the whole program. They're very good technically, and the crowd is going wild in there. So that's pretty amazing.
And Esha, how did you originally get into music, and what were you doing before you founded Anesh?
I started doing music when I was 2 or 3 years old, I guess. I was drumming on the table, you know. And I continued drumming on the table and on everything there was throughout my childhood. And I started to buy a drum kit when I was 14, and I started my first band when I was 14 with some school kids and stuff. And Ash, I'm an Ash since the early days of KMFDM. That was an invention that came through KMFDM, and so before I was Nick or Nikki or something like that, you know.
Or even I really love Slick Idiot too. I mean, I also found it. I really love as much as Slick Idiot as much as I love KMFDM. I even think I might like Slick Idiot more. And at this current moment in time, now that you've been releasing Anesh title albums, it's almost like you brought Slick Idiot along with you or something. Do you have plans to go back to Slick Idiot, or is it okay just now for being Anesh?
No, and Slick Idiot is on the back burner in the moment. It's you have to see that a lot of Slick Idiot was my kind of influence, of course, but it wouldn't have been possible without Günter Schultz, who has a good ear and is a very good engineer and also programmer and stuff, you know, and of course guitar player, no doubt. I mean, the last Slick Idiot album that was success is definitely more like a solo album, basically, you know. I wouldn't mind to go back to Slick Idiot. The only plans I have right now for Slick Idiot would be like a new best of double CD or something like that. So that's what I think about doing in the next whatever near future.
Or double LP. I would love to have it on vinyl.
Yeah, of course, if possible. Vinyl is of course more expensive to produce, way more expensive, and it takes sometimes months to get your product, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the craziest thing. So of course the demand is so high at the moment that the vinyl plants are totally they don't know what to do. They're too busy, you know.
I remember listening to Success in high school, and I really enjoyed that. And I don't know, there was something with that, too, where I remember listening to KMFDM the first time when I was, like, 14, and I would get everyone confused with Raymond Watts and Sasha and you, and I kind of now understand later on that I really liked more of the Anesh side coming on, and I felt there was some influence in that, and I feel like there is something with the Anesh Slick Idiot side you don't get normally in the average KMFDM. Like, I feel like Slick Idiot has more of this goth or edgy or even humorous side to it that I think is certain. Do you think your music more appeals to, like, that goth subculture, or even, like, there's a queer edge to it, certainly?
Yeah, queer edge is good. I like that. But, I mean, the goth subculture is a very narrow kind of view, you know what I'm saying? I think I rather be treated independently from this whole scenario. I mean, obviously, I might be part of that, but I don't really. I'm not aiming for being a goth band or a gothic or like a dark rock or whatever that is. So I'm not aiming for that. It's just I think I have nothing to do with certain goth bands, because if you go to the goth genre and you look at gothic bands in the goth and dark rock genre, there's certain similarities and there's a lot of the same, you know what I'm saying? And I try to avoid that.
Mm. Who are some of your early influences as far as music goes?
Well, you know, I grew up in Germany, and what I really liked when I was a really young person was stuff like mid-age King Crimson, or even jazz rock and stuff like that. You know, so I was more like interested in this more complicated intellectual music. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And what kind of music was dominant in Germany at the time KMFDM was founded?
Yeah, dominant was like very popular cheesy music, obviously.
Was the kind of like Neue Deutsche Welle kind of music popular?
Yeah, well, you know, this is also like a term like industrial or gothic, you know. But it was actually the term Neue Deutsche Welle is a term basically created by the record industry, it means that it was like very, very cheesy bands that actually started out after the real people started out, like DAF,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just kind of people from the really late 70s, early 80s, Einstürz und der Neubauten, Test Department, all those people. There were a lot of people like bands of Malaria and stuff like that. So they were the real Neue Deutsche Welle. But then later it became just a term for pop music that was kind of similar, you know, and was marketed in a bigger way. I liked DAF a lot, definitely. Neubauten, definitely. You know, when they started out, and you know, let me say mid-80s, they were basically the biggest band, the most influential band for people like me, you know, and Sasha, of course.
So there's a lot of political imagery that's gone into your music. I know in Germany there was a lot of turbulence when bands like DAF were around, because you had groups like the Red Army faction, and you had a lot of political turmoil still. Did that influence your imagery at all?
Well, I think it did, but this is nothing I really want to be affiliated with necessarily, because, I mean, this group had maybe a good intellectual base, but in the long run, the practice where they were killing normal people also, and they were bombing the shit off certain places and businesses, and basically hurt the janitor and killed the janitor or the little cop or whatever. You know? So it is, of course, it was part of the zeitgeist, obviously, but it was, this thing already went on before we started. It was before our time, basically, because that goes down to the 70s, you know, in the early 80s and stuff like that. It became kind of more underground, and it was less successful. I mean, the Rote Armee Fraktion, RAF, that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Red Army Fraction.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that they KMFDM in any way condoned that type of deal. But I think the fact that there was still a left in Germany that was very there was just a lot of political turmoil that I think influences the music.
Mm-hmm. It all depends. It all depends. Some of that subculture from the early 80s in Germany was based also in Berlin, and Berlin itself was a political, was a political specialty, and because it was isolated, it was in the middle of the GDR. It was, so to speak, a free island in the middle of communism, you know. And it was a special atmosphere, and a lot of people went there to don't get drafted from the German military. Back then, it was a mandatory army still, you know. So if you moved to West Berlin, you were free of the of the mandatory thing. So you had, you didn't need to go. You didn't, it didn't draft you, you know.
Did you visit East Germany before the fall of the Berlin Wall?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. Yeah, it was kind of a regular sport of mine, so to speak, or a hobby, you know, saying, to go to East Berlin. You became like a visa for the entire day. You had to go back at 12 at night. You had to be back in West Berlin, you know. It was kind of complicated there, and they also made money on that. East Germany made money on that. You had to exchange 25 Deutschmarks into 25 East Marks. Also, on top of it, you had to pay five Deutschmarks for visa fees and stuff. But in reality, the East Mark and the West Mark's exchange rate was something like 1 to 19, you know. So they made a lot of money from getting this $25. And you were in East Berlin, and you sometimes didn't even know what to spend it on, you know. And we went to fancy restaurants to get rid of the money and stuff. But it was a very interesting experience back in the days to go there. And I remember in East Berlin, you know, close to Alexanderplatz, there was a music store, and the only thing they had in the music store was the same amplifier times 50. So there was nothing in the store then, 50 times the same amplifier. It was a very strange thing to see. Also, when you went to a clothing store, there was like the same jacket in gray and blue, like over and over and over, the same jacket. So that didn't have much of a variety, and that probably caused the fall of this of the communism, you know, of this communism, the real communism, like we knew.
One of Slick Idiot's song, XS, was featured in True Blood, as well as the KMFDM song, Ooh La La, was featured in Hellraiser 3. It's funny is because we just had one of the actors on from Hellraiser, Nicholas Vince. Can you talk about those two songs, the involvement in the Hellraiser films?
Yeah, I mean, back then when the Hellraiser was Ooh La La, yeah, it was a specific song we recorded for that film. It was kind of fun to do that. But it was back then we were on TVT. TVT took care of all that, and, you know, they pushed hard to get us in multiple Hollywood movies back in the days. So. And it was fun to do it, of course. I remember, as I saw that, that's a funny thing. You work on the song over and over and over, and for hours and hours and hours. And then, you know, they have the music, and then you watch the movie, and you see, like, for 20 seconds. You see, you're really in the background when, I guess, the guy went into the disco or something, right? And the song was playing for 20 seconds, you know, underneath some comment or so. Access, it was True Blood. Yeah, that was Cleopatra Records put that together, you know, and it was nice to have that in there. Of course, it was, by the way, the remix of Rammstein's drummer Christoph.
Yeah, it's funny, the song Doomy on Spank, it has that really horror vibe to it too, and it introducts that sample. It's like, it makes you feel like you're in a Psycho or some kind of horror film, but it's also this jam rock.
Oh yeah, of course, you asked me about the genre. I'm actually not really, I'm not really down with the fantasy or this kind of genre, to be honest. But, you know, I have to, of course, I like if people like that song in that kind of context, of course. But I'm rather like more in interested in political things, documentaries or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, I have a hard time with fantasy or kind of splatter or any kind of Dracula movies or something like that.
Whose idea was it to get your music on? Was it Clive Barker's idea, or was it the director or producer of that one?
On what movie now?
Oh, the Hellraiser 3 and the other Hellraiser 1, it was True Blood.
Yeah, I'm sure whose idea it was. It was obviously the director's idea, and about in combination with our record company, TVT, back then, who took care that this whole stuff gets together, because they made obviously all the money. So. The good thing is that this movies, if you own this movies, and this movies are resent on cable TV or in Sweden, for example, I still get a few bucks out of that, you know, being like a co-writer of that song, you know.
I wanted to ask, since you said you're interested in politics and you're very associated with the industrial scene, one of the things that I think makes KMFDM stand out is the left-wing political imagery. A lot of industrial bands use a lot of more right-wing imagery. How what do you like think about that? Do you wish there was more openly left-wing bands?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. It's not that easy to say. I mean, it's I'm not sure KMFDM is a left-wing band. Besides, left-wing is not a negative term for me, obviously. But I don't. The imagery, you're right. It's the imagery reminds me on old communist pamphlets and stuff like that from the 30s. You know, that's correct. But of course, if you're an intelligent person and you write some lyrics, you will end up automatically reflecting your environment, reflecting political reality and stuff like that. So you will end up working around that stuff if you don't want to write love songs or some cheesy stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting for the political angle. I think you get like people on both the far right and the far left maybe are attracted to certain types of music because even though they're on opposite ends of the political spectrum, they're both people who are sort of angry or disenfranchised with like mainstream society and pop culture.
Sure. So what's is there any right-wing band in your opinion? You talked about imagery or really about lyrics? Is there any you know in the U.S.?
Well, not necessarily that. I don't know that they're right wing or if they're parodying it sometimes. But bands like Leibach uses a lot of imagery, but I think it's more to satirize a lot of times. And Rammstein sometimes does too. I think.
Also, there's a band called like Dunkelwerk uses like Nazi imagery, but the thing is, they're not like a fascist band. It's more like the theme is apocalyptic. But they use this sort of imagery. It's called. Are you familiar with them? They're called Dunkelwerk.
Of course. I know what you're saying now. Now we understand. See Hansel and Gretel. You know them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're friends of mine. You know Hansel and Gretel. I remember they played in Germany and they weren't allowed to sell their T-shirts because they thought they have like Nazi images on their shirts, stuff like that. You know, that was pretty interesting. No, I agree. I mean, you know, Leibach, I understand what you're saying, but Leibach is, of course, far away from being a right-wing band, obviously.
Right.
But, of course, Leibach has... you have to see that Leibach is a name the Nazis gave a certain town in Yugoslavia, you know what I'm saying? So that's why they play with that. It's kind of like a revenge on the Nazis or something like that. You know? Because Leibach is the term for Ljubljana, I believe, right? In Yugoslavia, so. Ex-Yugoslavia. So
now it's interesting that if you think about like a left-wing band would be like, I think, Atari Teenage Riot, which was also in that same Berlin area. They definitely have contrasts and sounds where Leibach and Rammstein would be more like big and trumpets and kind of loud. Right. And Atari Teenage Riot would be loud and distorted and angry. And it's kind of these strange contrast between left-wing, right-wing sound, even if you have people have these lifestyle choices or some kind of weird subcultures in music that people associate with to get a certain feeling out of people.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, I cannot see that Leibach listeners are really political in that kind of aspect. No, of course, they like the expression, they like the mightiness, the thickness, the slowness, and the stickiness of the whole thing. And I'm also friends with Hanin Elias from Atari Teenage Riot. We've been on Pig Face tours together and stuff like that. Yeah, she's. I remember, you know, like every May 1st in Berlin, there's this kind of like, kind of like an uprising for one day, where like. So to speak, anarchists, left-wing anarchists fight the cops, you know? and set stuff on fire. And it's every year on May 1st. May 1st is just kind of day of labor, you know, in Europe.
It's called May Day here.
Exactly. And no, and I know in the old days, Atari Teenage Riders played there, and they played on a flatbed truck. You know, they put their equipment on the truck and played on the street while all the stuff went down. It was very impressive, in a stylistic way, of course. Of course, I'm against violence as much as it gets, of course.
I know after the Columbine massacre happened in the United States, there was a kind of backlash against like industrial music, like KMFDM and Rammstein, and even Marilyn Manson. Do you think that massacre played a role in changing the culture of music? Because after that, like the music really kind of shifted more towards like bubblegum pop from like 99 to the early 2000s.
I'm not sure. I didn't observe that. I know that. I know that these people who did this that attack in Columbine were seen on surveillance cameras and stuff like that, wearing KMFDM shirts and KMFDM hats. So that's why the whole connection came together. Also, they quoted the song "Waste," you know, from the Cymbals album, KMFDM Cymbals album. They quoted that song "Waste" in their little statements online and stuff. So the "Waste" goes like at the end, "What I don't like, I waste." You know, so it's a very playful song, very fast and kind of angry in a way, but kind of very open to everything you can imagine. You know what I'm saying? So for these people, it was kind of like their little anthem for their doing. You know. But of course, I don't want to be affiliated with those people either, because I mean, you know, they were obviously sick in that, and they were isolated, and you know, they were having the issues. So. And I'm sorry for the victims. That's the one thing I can say. I don't remember that there was a shift in style. Maybe it was for bigger bands who were on bigger labels that just certain labels started to promote other stuff to get away from that or something. You know.
I find your music and KMFDM very therapeutic in a lot of ways.
Say it one more time, please.
I find the music very therapeutic.
Oh, therapeutic or something. Yeah, I understand. That's a lot of people taught me that. You know, there's a lot of people who taught me, yeah, man, you saved my life. You know, I was so, at the end, I was sick, I was this and that. And your music, you know, gave me new strength and, you know, and gave me hope. Yeah, that's the positive outcome of all that.
There's this kind of thing also online that if you still search any KMFDM song in the 90s, that somebody in the YouTube comments will write Dylan and Eric. And then there's this whole YouTube.
I think it's with the song, especially Son of a Gun from KMFDM.
Yeah, any reference to that, any of those albums, it seems to be a. I don't know. It's just maybe that's something is.
Yeah, it happened to me a lot that I was meeting people who told me the same story that, you know, we gave them hope and the strength of the music, but it could be all kind of other music. Other people have a different other bands. So it seems to be the kind of the fatness and the big beats and, you know, just more like in your face that it kind of sidetracks themselves. So it's kind of giving yourself pain to forget the other pain or whatever. So I'm happy that I could, you know, give people something if that was the case.
Your latest album is Trash Chick. What was it like making that album, and what are you happy if you were?
It's called Trash Chic.
Cheek? Oh.
It's not chic, but it's chic.
Okay.
Chic.
Interesting.
Trash chic. It's probably something totally different. No, it's trash chic, like, you know, C-H-I-C.
Oh.
Yeah, it means very chic, but in that case, trash is spelled like trash can. You know? So T-R-A-S-H-C-H-I-C.
And that was actually voted between different titles on Pledge Music, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that cut-up style of, like, the I don't know, I'm thinking of William Burroughs, where you cut up the words and you come up the title together and what the music is.
Yeah, that's correct. But I gave the trash chic was definitely a term I came up with, and I put it in into the pot as a possibility.
How's gospel singing and guitar licks become like the trademark to your sound?
Gospel singing. What do you mean by gospel singing? Do you mean like multiple voices?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with this whole, you know, on the Gunter Schultz side, you have like the guitar riffs that will kind of like very dance heavy, and then you have so many different female voice singing that you won't find in any other music, you know?
Oh, really? I don't know. That's what I like. And it's also the KMFDM tradition, obviously. But because we had a lot of times in KMFDM, we were all singing together in a way. It was like Raymond singing, Sasha singing, myself singing, Skold singing, or whoever I was singing. And I like that. I like that. I like that kind of harmonies and stuff. You know, it makes life harder and not easier because I have to edit all that stuff. So if you produce a record like that, you have way more work than with a single voice and stuff. You know? So I like it. It's I like the harmonies. I like the fullness and richness of a lot of vocals. I always admire that, a lot of vocals and guitar, of course, classic KMFDM style. You know, the beat and the guitar. That's what I like. So.
As far as Rammstein goes, sometimes people compare the styles. Would you say that, have you been influenced by Rammstein to a degree?
Rammstein is influenced by KMFDM.
Okay.
No, that's, I even admit that, so it's not all of no, yeah. I mean, that's a way younger band. I mean, they're like not way young in age, but they started later, obviously.
Yeah, KMFDM is as old as me, because I was born in 85.
Exactly.
Or even older than Nine Inch Nails, and people say Nine Inch Nails are like godfather industrial music, though they just have very popular scene in America, when you can make the arguing case that maybe KMFDM has the largest longevity of industrial music and popularity of that.
Yeah, I mean, what I said before, then again, we have this term industrial music, and I don't think Nine Inch Nails has anything to do with industrial music. Oh. For me, it's just industrial music is strictly Neubauten or, you know, test department, people banging on metal or so, maybe Die Krupps in early days or something, you know. So what we do is something else. It's just maybe a kind of EBM even, you know.
Yeah, that there's EBM, but also EDM with electronic dance music today. And that's now when a normal person hears about EBM or old industrial, it's almost like things of the past, and it's like people today are changing genres as they go by. I mean, I don't know what's up with today's industrial music, but I've recently had a chance to listen to Victor Love's new album that has a KMFDM song in, or at least Sasha's on there. And it sounds very of this mix between this kind of future pop industrial and certainly with new synthesizers going on. And certainly there is this flirtation with that whole goth thing. But at the same time, I'm not so sure if industrial will last in the next decades or so, or at least involve the new thing. I mean, is it just something in Germany, or is it bigger than that?
I don't think you're... Besides Rammstein, there's a few other bands, you know, like Das Ich, or there's a few more, of course, but it is a small scene. It's not very huge, man. I would say Rammstein is a different story, because they just overstepped the whole genre and the limits of the genre and did their own thing. And, of course, if you see them live, you see how what they do with their explosives and their... the whole live show is quite amazing, you know, and it's more like a theater act or like a performance or something, or like an art performance. And if people call this industrial, I understand and I appreciate that, you know, but I don't feel like I'm industrial. I do what I do. You know what I'm saying? I do what I did before. I did what I did with KMFDM. I was like an idiot. I continue a certain kind of style. And this is important to me, to be not like everybody else. This is very important to me, if possible, of course. I like also dance music. I have to say, I agree that I like dance music. I like that songs are experimental or noisy, but a lot of times I like them also dancey. You know?
What do you think about Project Pitchfork?
Yeah, it's okay. You know, it's something I can rely to a certain degree. You know.
What drum machines and synthesizers have you been using on your latest albums?
Well, I use some old analog stuff, but I combine it with modern like software stuff. You know, so it's a combination out of outboard gear and stuff based within the computer. So it's I still like very old analog stuff is sometimes good, like Mini Moog or something like that, or you know, also Nordlead and Virus, stuff like that I like. But you know, sometimes I mean, we don't use the sampler anymore. In old days we had the hardware sampler. You don't do that anymore because you know, you do it in the software, you know, and it's just even easier because you can handle it better. The only industrial thing that really is connected to that is would be the case that there is certain things of course recycled, you know, you kind of stuff you find in the atmosphere of everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Online stuff or whatever, little pieces and bits you recreate and make your own sound out of it or something. You know? Of course, if you hear my records, you hear that there's a lot of, yeah. There's a lot of environmental stuff and like O-tone, like we say, and stuff. You know?
It sounds, yeah, on the new album, especially like with the intro in Dog to You, where there's this kind of sampling going on that's high, and there's a lot of that. And it also feels that, like, it's interesting too. I do feel that there's a very long things under the Slick Idiot and NSH name where it's like 8 minute tracks and they get really like like it's a pop song, or they have a really good interesting intro, the spoken word piece, the song itself, and then like this really trippy outro. And I think that's like so unique to it, and very like the song becomes like an art piece in itself.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, that's sometimes I say I like most intros and outros, you know. And I like a lot of vocals, and I like guitar, and I like dance beats. You know? So you can come down to that. So, and I like some noise, obviously, in there. But I like, especially, I like outros and intros, you know. Because it's like a song of itself that's kind of attached to the main song, you know, in a way.
By dance music, do you mean like more industrial dance music or like the Euro dance music?
Well, is there a difference?
I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting to think about.
No, Peter, what was that Eurodance music I was sending you the other day with the anime?
There's certainly a genre of dance music right now called Nightcore, and it's basically sped up pop songs, but they put it to like pictures of anime. It's been getting some playback through like nerd conventions or anime conventions, and certainly it has its... It's easy to make. It's kind of like vaporwave, where you slow down the samples and you're reminded of the past of the 80s.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. This all's interesting for me, to be honest. I kind of like that stuff. Yeah, exactly. It's 70s and 80s, kind of Eye of the Tiger keyboard or something like that, and or like Diana Ross, or you know. Yeah, I know. It's a good genre. I like that because it's recycling other stuff and you know, refurbishing it. That's what I also like to do sometimes.
You're probably going to hate me for saying this, but actually, I mean, I like the old like 80s pop bands like Alphaville and Falco.
Interesting. I like them too.
Well, I mean, it's classic, you know. There's nothing you can say about it. I mean, Alphaville is a different story, but I know someone in Berlin who played with Alphaville, the guitar player, Rudy. I know how they would even become so big. You know? In Japan, big in the U.S.
I know there's some Slick Idiot and an Ash song of... it was on Success. It was by Hot Chocolate. That's funny. And... Give the People What They Want were on the Spank album. So I think it's funny when there is you cover these soul songs that give it a different vibe. And it's definitely – I always thought it's interesting because that was kind of a uniqueness to that where you're covering the song too. And at the same time as well as like I noticed too that there's this obsession in KMFDM with the five-letter code. You also seem still to use that five-letter code, like Dog to You and Drive. And
Interesting.
It's still there, the five-letter code. And so
to be honest, it's the first time that I actually see that. And Talk to You was actually five-letter. I didn't even know that, to be honest with you. Now, I know that Drive, of course, is a certain thing, or Purge or something. You know? Yeah. I like to do that sometimes because it's also part of my history, you know, and I try to come up with new five-letter words or five-letter titles, you know. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, sometimes you wish that sucker would just drop the E and it would be S-U-C-K-R or something.
Sucker, yeah, exactly.
I wanted to ask, since you're into, I think, animal rights, what did you think about the Ringling Brothers Circus shutting down, I guess, now?
I heard that from my American friends. I didn't even know that, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, I know that just poor elephants or poor animals, they're having a hard time, of course. I mean, to have an animal do little funny tricks is, of course, you can only reach that goal by, like, kind of kicking their ass and make them miserable at a certain point. But I also know the transportation was kind of awkward. I had a friend who worked in the circus in there, and I saw them being on this flatbed train cars, standing up on chains, and they were, you know, when they drove from one city to another and stuff. I'd rather think it's a good thing, you know, but I was so worried about where the animals will end up and stuff, and hope they will find a home, and hope they will stay together in one group and not get them split up and stuff, you know.
How did you get into animal rights?
I don't know. It happened that I'm a vegetarian for a long time, and I wish I would be a vegan. I'm not a vegan yet, but I do a little cheese once in a while, but I don't eat eggs or anything like that.
I love cheese.
I know. Yeah, of course. But if you see how the milk cows are treated, and it's a very bad thing. You know, but besides the point, it's a more logical thing. You know, if you're like a halfway intelligent person, you think about the whole thing. If you see the reality of animal farming and all the stuff, then you have to consider that. You know?
And people are really removed from like what they eat. I mean, I can actually respect hunters who eat their food because they have that connection. But with like factory farming, I remember taking the train through the Central Valley of California and just seeing how all the cows are piled in. I mean, factory farming is pretty barbaric in the United States. Is it as bad in Germany, or are there stricter regulations about how farm animals are treated?
Well, it's exactly the same bad, you know. There's no difference. And of course, you go to the supermarket and buy your piece of meat, but if you drive around, like being on tour and stuff, you see the farms in the middle of nowhere, you know what I'm saying? Especially, of course, in Northern California and stuff like that, or in other states, of course. It's the same in Europe. There's a bad thing about the European Union because it's kind of promotes the idea to give you kind of a support money. They have a lot of money that goes to the agricultural industry and animal farms, but only if you have a certain category and a certain size of it. So, in other words, the European Union actually supports big animal farms, you know, financially.
There was, I think there was an older KMFDM song during the Symbols period, and I think it was a Skinny Puppy song. I think it was Torture. And someone once told me that I think Torture might be about animal rights. I'm not so sure behind the history behind that track, but
no, it has to do with Ogre from Skinny Puppy. You know?
Yeah, it's his.
Who is obviously also an animal rights person, and this whole live show with like the artificial blood and stuff kind of points out in that direction, you know.
Yeah, I think also we had on the show Robert and Human of Realicide. I think Robert and Human also likes to talk about animal rights too. It's certainly a big issue, especially if you love animals and are very close to him. I mean, I was a vegetarian for a bit for myself, but I actually had to quit because I don't know. It's just something hard to do. You have to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's a personal choice, obviously, but I think you can. You don't have to feel low energy or so if you don't eat meat. I mean, there's ways around that.
What was your favorite time period when you were with KMFDM? Would it be like the early 90s or later 90s, or was there a particular period before that?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, because to me there's the romantic and the intensity of the early days when Sasha and I were hanging out on a daily basis and seeing each other every day, writing music over and over and over. And then there's, of course, the days when we had the huge success, and we played in front of thousands of people, and it's, of course, also a very good thing. If you get so much feedback, it's a luxury and a really, like, a privilege to have that many people follow you, and it makes it easier to produce music and do certain things, because you get the money to do it in good studios and stuff.
As far as your fan base goes, like, I became a fan of your work fairly recently. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and my memory of the 90s was more like the 90s pop music. As far as your fans go, would you say they're more from your original fan base, or are you having a lot of new younger people discovering your music for the first time?
Yeah, I agree. There is a lot of young people are discovering the music again, and that's a very good thing about this, so to speak, so-called gothic scene. Because they seem to be interested in this kind of more old school or traditional music, or hold on to certain artists for such a long time, and don't lose patience and stick with the artists and follow the artists and stuff like that. So I can say there's a lot of young people following old KMFDM stuff that's actually their age.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, thinking about that, like, I noticed too that Slick Idiot is 2 5-letter words as well with KMFDM, and I always was interested, what was the origin behind the name Slick Idiot?
To be honest, I was at that time I was living in New York, in Manhattan, and I was just writing down certain names I would like my new project to be called, and Idiot was one of them, and Slick was another one, And there was a German friend coming over, visiting New York, and then I said, "Here, what kind of name should I pick?" And then Slick and Idiot were, back to back. And he says, "Like, why don't you put them together?" So that's what I did then, because it turns out that there is an old band called Idiot. I think they're from the Netherlands or so, like an old hippie band. And Slick is, I don't know, very common name also, I guess. There's Slick, there's like Slick Shoes, Slick this and that. No, it's good. I mean, I kind of long run like the name a lot, and it also represents a certain look at certain people, of course. Like kind of poser-esque show-offs, etc. This is kind of like what Slick Idiot's supposed to be. And here with the new title, it's already kind of similar to that, Trash Chic.
Do you know about the Wesley Willis song which he did about KMFDM?
I'm not sure.
Okay, Wesley Willis was this mentally autistic man, but he was very famous for playing on the keyboard, and he was considered an outside artist, and he would make songs about bands he liked, like Nirvana, but he had one song called KMFDM where he said he went to go see Angstfest during that period, and it was awesome, and he sings a song about it, and it's really funny.
Yeah, that kind of rings a bell. I think I remember a certain recording that I heard. It must have been 10, 15 years ago, or longer, right? 20 years ago or something.
How do you feel about the rise of digital downloads now replacing sort of physical media?
Well, you have to say nowadays, what do I think about digital downstreaming versus downloads? Because if you have a download, it's still considered to be kind of a mechanical recording in our world as a musician and a writer. So you will get some decent money for it, more or less, of course. If it's downstream, there's nothing really happening. You get like thousands of a penny or so. Because people have the feeling that if you don't stream it, you don't own it, it's not on your computer, it's somewhere in some server. And so that's why they don't have to pay you decent money, you know what I'm saying? So the downstreaming is the downfall of any alternative artists, obviously. So that will be the end of it. I see, I get statements that say like, whoa, 5,000 times downstreamed, and I get like 5 cents or so. Really, it's not kidding.
And a lot of music is out there on YouTube, and for like alternative musicians, it's a mixed bag, because on one hand, people are getting the music for free and they're losing out on the revenue. But on the other hand, it also, I think, exposes a lot of new people to music that they wouldn't have heard of otherwise. So I see it as kind of a mixed bag. But I mean, I'm not a musician, so I can't really speak from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you need a little income to kind of continue what you do. And I'm saying otherwise, it's going to be really bad. I think in the case of YouTube, that the mutual opinion, the common opinion is that it is kind of more like kind of a Wikipedia of sound or something, you know, that you kind of let it go and you rather enjoy that there is all your stuff available. I don't even have or done even even forgot that I did it and stuff like that. On the other hand, of course, it's easy to record that back into your computer and have it on file or whatever, but... So I think we rather tolerate YouTube and say thumbs up, you know, in a moment.
How did you meet Mona Moore and come up with the Enesh and Mona Sal, the one when you did, I think it was with 2 years ago, the 120 Tage, am I pronouncing that right? I remember when that came out.
Yeah, it's like days. Yeah, it goes back to the days when I came back to Berlin. I moved from New York to Berlin to see my parents more often, and that's where the whole thing took place. Yeah.
Because I noticed too, there was a recent, it was about a few years ago when there was having a Wax Trax reunion, and it was you, Mona, I think it was Raymond Watts and Gunter Schultz redoing some of the Nihil songs on that came at the end period, and I thought it was super cool that that was happening, and I wish there was more of a formation of that, actually.
Yeah, I tried to hold it together, but I even tried to do a tour after that with all the bands involved, but it didn't seem to happen. But now there's a Cox play again, and we played Pig played with them, and me being in Pig played with them, and
yeah, because there was
it's recent tour of that. Yeah, it's all good. I mean, so it gave me the chance to work again with Raymond, and so and now I continue that, and it's kind of interesting because you know, we're good old friends, and we have an easy time to work.
Because I think there's kind of like this weird civil war with KMFDM fans now. I know some friends who are like, the new KMFDM album with Sasha and Lucia was, you know, Our Time Will Come. Some people are like, oh, there's too many Sasha releases. But at the same time, there's this love for you on your side. And there's like this kind of civil war where it's like, what when you're talking about Mach 3 KMFDM with Sasha, or are you talking about that old school Lenesh KMFDM? And it seems to me that there's some more... I don't know. I seem to be more a fan of your side with Raymond and Gunter compared to, right. But I love them equally both. That's the thing.
Well, then you're happy, man. So, you know, it's, I don't really know what to say. Of course, I cannot really judge over the UK MFDM because I really don't listen to that stuff a lot. So, I mean, if something new comes out, I just have a little listen here and there and see what's left from the old days. Whatever, it's no, I really can't say anything about that. It's just it shouldn't be that big of a deal because obviously it's already based on the same thing. A lot of the same people are involved, so there should be still more collaboration between the people, actually, I'm saying, but it's obviously not possible right now, so
yeah.
What would you say about the sort of comment on the inspiration for the visual imagery that you use in your work, like the music videos, the illustrations for the album covers, and also the imagery of the of your clothing and how you present yourself? What are some of the inspirations for that?
It's a lot of the things I did by myself is obviously done by myself or like in collaboration with myself, so... It's hard to tell. I just do what I like. I don't really think much about it. So, you know, I just do what I like, and this is about it. I'm not influenced by anything, really. But it's hard to tell. So in the old days, it was a little different. But obviously, we used the same artist for every KMFDM album cover. That was kind of a continuous thing and kind of interesting.
Yeah, because... I when I think of your the whole style you're putting on, it's like this. I said it was like this weird queer background or this kind of street queer. This interesting. I'm having those vibes from it. That's personally me, but it's this interesting feeling.
It sounds very interesting, but I don't know where it's coming from, but it sounds good to me. So.
You mentioned that if you the one person that you'd like to work with that you haven't is Peter Murphy. Can you talk about that and who are other people you'd like to work with? You haven't worked with yet?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have Peter Murphy. I might have mentioned that a long time ago. So, I mean, I used to be kind of not really friends with him, but I met him, whatever, chatted with him, and I kind of admired him up to a certain degree. But I mean, I liked his voice. And but in the moment, I don't think I want to collaborate with him. Collaborating with whom? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it all depends. I wouldn't mind to collaborate with Al Jorgensen on something crazy or something, you know, but, or like, or, I mean, Trent Reznor and I had also contacted earlier days, but then, you know, it didn't happen that we got together. I wouldn't mind to hang out with him and do something, because I see that he's the same guy hanging in the studio and kind of like using the studio like a laboratory and stuff. You know?
Oh, didn't you say Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails was influenced by your work?
I didn't say that, no.
Okay, oh, Pilliter, you said that.
I said Rammstein's influence by KMFDM. Yeah. That's they obviously agree on that. So.
Well, I was gonna say I really appreciate that you avoid or try not to be pigeonholed in the industrial label, because it's become this label that's just for marketing, and the word has very little meaning now. You know, a band like Nine Inch Nails is completely different from KMFDM, completely different from Godflesh. You know, all of these bands have a very distinct sound, including KMFDM and what you're doing with your solo work. So I appreciate you avoiding that label or trying not to be pigeonholed by it.
Right. Yeah, totally. I can only agree. I try to avoid that. The only thing they have in common is maybe throwing around microphone stands. Ha, ha, ha.
I always think, too, that this might sound weird. When I listen to the new album... I always have this, I love it, but it also gives, there's this humorous aspect to it. Do you often incorporate comedy, or you don't mean to be funny? Because I find some of your music to be funny, and I like it. It's this humorous thing going on. I don't know.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like that, too. It's humorous, yet it's very serious. But that's what life is all about. It maybe has to do with the very old influence by people like Frank Zappa. You know? Mm-hmm. It was also an influence on old KMFDM that showed us this kind of aspect of complicated music and yet very humorous stuff. You know, and that's why I also cover the songs like from Hot Chocolate and stuff like that. That's exactly why I'm doing that, because it's kind of like... it's fun to do it. You know? It's kind of a humorous thing to cover certain cheesy songs in your own special style, you know.
Or even getting dressed up. I think in the old Angstfest time, you would just have your boxer shorts on and just play live. And I always thought that was this kind of a humorous thing. Or I don't know.
Yeah, I was half naked basically. I like to do that. I was I was trying to flash my body and enjoyed it very much. Because I'm actually also like to be on stage and and be extrovert and stuff. You know.
Growing up, would you say you were more outgoing, or did you become more outgoing with your music?
Yeah, exactly. When I grew up, I was totally shy. I was blushing. Sorry. I was blushing a lot, and I was very shy, and it was a nightmare to say something in front of the class. You know. And so from being a musician, starting out music, I kind of reverted to the opposite. You know, I became very extrovert.
I think that's true with a lot of musicians and artists tend to be introverted, and actors as well, and they use their work as a way to express themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the music helped me to change that, you know. I was too shy. I couldn't even, it was hard for me to be, talk to people, talk to girls or something like that. You know, it was even impossible. But the music changed that around, so I became the opposite of that.
I always feel that, I always think it's amazing that you have some of the backing female singers on some of your tracks. And I'm always interested, are these like longtime friends, or do you go on a board and hire them, or do you, what's kind of the process behind that? And it seems like they're also singing, it's always something different to look out for. And I think it's such a trademark to your sound.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, it's usually long-term friendships and stuff, you know. I mean, you know, the last singer is, one of the singers is Erica DeLancian, and she's involved in my work since 2009. You know. She was also on Success, and she was on tour with me already 4 or 5 times or something like that, you know. And there's this other girl, a woman, Trixie Rice or Reese, and she's, I know her since 1998 from New York, you know. And so the singers go way back there, but you know, it's a lot of the stuff on this record is also, on my last record is also, Infractions was already composed in 1999, some of it, you know. It's very new stuff that got composed a few months ago. There's a few things that got composed really a long time ago. But I finished them up nowadays, and I produce them to the fullest and to the end.
One of my friends once said to me, like, oh, well, they probably hire prostitutes and sing. I don't know if that's true or not.
What does it mean?
I know. I don't know if you have any porn actresses that are actually backing your singing or your tracks.
Not me, no. I don't like prostitutes. I mean, I'm sorry for them, but I don't see them or go there or whatever.
Maybe it's because of the image. I don't know.
I have no idea, man. I have no idea. I don't know. I'm against prostitution, by the way.
Interesting.
I was going to ask, do you feel like there's an issue with the way people view who you are on stage and then confusing that with who you are as a person?
I don't know. I mean, I hope I'm not weird on stage. I mean, I think I'm not that different. I mean, I'm obviously, when I'm in private, I'm calm and I'm laid back. And obviously, when I'm stage, I'm more fired up and wired. But in the long run, I don't think there's much of a difference. It's more like kind of the pace is a little different, you know.
What direction do you see yourself going in with your music in the future?
Well, I would stay the same, obviously. You know? I would continue to do my danceable music with a lot of vocals and a lot of guitars like it came after him, and a lot of noise and a lot of vocals, obviously. So it won't change. So that's what I like the most. I usually have the concept for the next record already in my head and before I actually start. But so certain fragments are already written and certain things are there. I have to just develop it to the finished product. But in the long run, I don't think it will much change, because what I do is what I like, and I don't want to do anything else. I mean, so I cannot do anything else than what I know, you know.
Do you have a when is your next album going to be released? And do you have the name of the album out yet, or is that you're still working on that?
I do have the name, but I don't want to talk about it right now.
Okay.
But I don't want it to be stolen, you know, that's why. The next record will be out maybe a year from now or something. Yeah.
Or even going on tour. Do you plan on going tour or just going back in the studio at the current moment?
What I said before is in March we will play a few big shows in the UK and in Europe. And then in the summer there might be another big tour in the US or Canada. In the fall there might be an MS tour in the US and Canada. But it's too early to say, but definitely the big thing is definitely happening, the Nash thing you have to see. Mm-hmm. And I also enjoy to be in Peak. You know, it's kind of a, I sing also together with Raymond. Both our vocals remind also people to on the old classic KMFDM days and stuff. But it's a lot of fun playing guitar and sing a little and play a little keys and enjoy yourself.
Would you say your fan base, is it disproportionately German, or is it pretty equally distributed across the world?
My fan base is bigger in the U.S. So the U.S. is bigger, Germany is a little, U.K. is a little, Scandinavia is a little, France, a little Poland, but the main people, the main fans seem to be in the U.S. and Canada.
Do you have an idea why you think American audience is more receptive to your work than a German audience?
I don't think it has to do with that. It's more that our history is in the U.S. is bigger, because from being on Wax Trax, on TVT, and all those American labels, we were the American crowd was more exposed to our stuff than the German crowd. We didn't really tour Europe so much, only occasionally, but we toured regularly the U.S. or North America.
I love listening to the classic cheesy NSH album. That was kind of my first exposure to your work, and as well as some of the other KMFDM records. I think, like, especially the NSH Sound or Slick Idiot, like Rule the Mob or It Won't Do or even Excess has that kind of... There's a certain, like, you sample a guitar riff, and it's like this industrial house thing going on. Like, it's rock and roll punk house, and I just really wish there were more music like that. And I don't exactly want to call it digital hardcore or anything, but certainly when you look up industrial music, you're assuming that it's electronic and rock, but of course there's a history back of banging on drums being more like Laibach. And I feel as though your music is certainly unique, is because it's definitely... dance with kind of this punk edge, and it certainly, I believe, feels like this kind of lifestyleism to it that's so unique, that's attached to it.
Well, that's good to hear, man. That sounds like a compliment. Thanks so much. Yeah. I think I like to funk in that case, because I kind of funky. I mean, because it's obviously I'm a more rhythmic based person. I used to be a drummer, and for a long time, I was a drummer, and then I became a singer, a guitarist, and producer. So I'm obviously affiliated with the rhythm.
We are at the end of the show. NSH, I would like to thank you for being on. We're all big fans of your work.
Thank you so much.
And also, thanks, Pilliter and JG Michael.
Awesome.
Greetings to the East Coast, greetings to the West Coast. Thanks so much, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure. And, thanks for liking my music. Thanks for being interested, and I'm continue doing my stuff, obviously. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to you, NSH. Bye.
My pleasure, man. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.